This is your Polycast for Wednesday, October 5th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Bernie Sanders visits Minnesota, and rematches may be a key to the balance of power in the state house. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders made a pair of stops in Minnesota yesterday in Minneapolis and Duluth. He was here a lot during the primary season. This time he was working on behalf of his former opponent, Hillary Clinton. He was trying to convince his supporters, particularly younger voters, to cast their ballots for her. But as Brian Baxter reports, not all of them are on board or excited about the election.
On the Minneapolis campus of the University of Minnesota, the affection for Bernie Sanders is still strong. He got an enthusiastic reception as he took the stage at Northrop Auditorium.
Thank you, Minnesota!
Sanders, the surrogate, sounded an awful lot like Sanders, the candidate. But he made sure to put in a strong plug for Clinton. He said she's a much better choice than Republican nominee Donald Trump.
Our job is to elect Hillary Clinton as president, but to also understand that our job is not done just by electing Secretary Clinton. On the day after, we continue the movement.
It's a message Sanders is bringing to other states where he beat Clinton or ran close to her in their long nomination battle. Sanders won big in Minnesota's precinct caucuses in March. Many polls show Clinton with an edge over Trump with younger voters, commonly referred to as the millennial bloc. But many of them are also considering third-party candidates or sitting out the election. Some of that was evident on campus away from the Sanders rally. That's how University of Minnesota sophomore Waco Adam feels. He was impressed with Sanders and the way he ran his campaign. But he says a vote for Clinton is out of the question, and he doubts he'll even bother to vote.
A lot of people will choose her because they think she's a lesser of the two evils, but I don't think so. I think she might be worse than Trump. Actually, if I voted, I would probably vote for Trump.
But university graduate student Tyne Alexander says Clinton is far more qualified than Trump and will get her vote.
She certainly has the kind of commander-in-chief look to her. She's got the business savvy. She's got the diplomatic experience.
University senior and history major Ike Sarak also intends to vote for Clinton.
But I'm not exactly thrilled about it.
Sarak grew up in Owatonna. His reservations about Trump's demeanor and policy positions outweigh what he sees as shortcomings with Clinton's candidacy.
I wasn't one of the, I guess you could say, crazy Bernie people that go here either, where they want everything free or they think they should. I don't know. I think he dreamed a little too much, possibly, but there just seems to be so many scandals with Hillary.
That's much the same with Amber Rassler, a second-year psychology major from Bemidji. She says she's not very enthusiastic about the election.
I was when Bernie was in the race, but now not so much. Hillary's not my favorite candidate, but neither is Donald Trump, and I'd rather see Hillary Clinton in the White House than Donald Trump.
This is the first major election that Rassler will vote in, which has her a bit deflated.
Just not exactly happy with how it all ended up, but I mean, it's not always going to go how you want it to, so.
Covering politics with reporting assistance from Hannah Weichel, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Before Bernie Sanders spoke yesterday in Minneapolis, Brian Baxt had a few minutes to talk with him. He asked the Vermont senator why he came to a reliably blue state like Minnesota.
I think we want to make sure that Secretary Clinton wins traditionally blue states, that she holds up very well and wins the battleground states, and she holds on to those states, you know, where we expect her to do well. I am this week going to be here in Minnesota. We're going to be in Iowa. We're going to be in Michigan. We're going to be in Wisconsin. We're going to be in Maine. We're going to be in New Hampshire. So I'm going to do my best to make sure that Donald Trump, who I consider to be a disaster, to do my best to make sure that he is not elected as our next president.
Minnesota is one of the places where you had one of your widest margins of victory in the nominating season, and one of those key constituencies was the younger voter. What was it about your message, and what is it about hers that she's having trouble getting some of those people to come over?
Well, I think we did well with working families and with young people, because we told the truth. And the truth is that while the economy today is much better than it was when Bush left office, The other truth is that for many, many decades, we have seen a middle class in decline and massive levels of income and wealth inequality, and we have got to deal with that. The reality is that for young people, unless we change our economy, they stand a chance to have a lower standard of living than their parents. That is not acceptable, and that has got to change. And I think the other point that I'm glad that Secretary Clinton has picked up on this is that it is totally absurd that we are seeing millions of people leaving school deeply in debt, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 in debt. And that is why Secretary Clinton is supporting a proposal to make public colleges and universities tuition-free for all families earning less than $125,000 a year. That's a pretty big deal.
We've talked to several young voters over the last few days about what they're thinking about as the presidential election approaches, and some of the polls have reflected this, that a lot of them are entertaining third-party choices or considering not going out at all. What does that portend for this election and moving forward?
Well, I think if that's true, or the degree to which it is true, it is clearly not a good thing. I want people to think about what it will mean to this country if Donald Trump, who has based his entire campaign on bigotry, who is a man who is trying to divide us up, who is a candidate for president who thinks that climate change is a hoax, a candidate who insults women or Latinos or Muslims, that is not the kind of person we need to be president. So you can't sit this one out. What we have got to do, in my view, is elect Secretary Clinton, and we have to fight as hard as we can for a progressive agenda which tells the billionaire class, Donald Trump and his friends, that they cannot have it all, that we are going to create a government that works for all of us, not just the 1%.
You talked about the working class segment of your base and then how they were key to how you did here and in other places. He seems to be doing okay with those people as well when he talks about his positions on trade and about the rigged economy. What does your party, or what does the Democratic Party, have to do to kind of pull those people back into the fold?
That's a good question. And the answer is that the Democrats are going to have to be a hell of a lot bolder than they have been in the past in standing up to the billionaire class and the top 1%. The truth is our trade policies have been a disaster for millions of workers who have lost their jobs. The minimum wage today is $7.25 an hour. In my view, we've got to raise that minimum wage to a living wage of $15 an hour. We need to make public colleges and universities tuition-free. We need pay equity for women who are now making 79 cents on the dollar compared to men. We've got to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. And when we do that, we can create many, many millions of decent-paying jobs. So there's a lot that has to be done. And I would hope that people understand that what we have seen in Congress since President Obama has been in office has been an unprecedented level of obstructionism, where Republicans have time and time and time again prevented us from going forward. I hope that under Secretary Clinton, we are going to make real progress in addressing low wages, rebuilding our infrastructure, creating jobs, and dealing with climate change.
Do you find his message on trade and the like to be genuine, or do you think he's saying what people want to hear?
Well, that's a good question, and I think that it's kind of phony. Here is a guy who is producing many of his products, not here in the United States, but he's producing them in Bangladesh, in Mexico, in China, in countries around the world where people earn starvation wages. I would think that if Mr. Trump is so sincere about his concerns about outsourcing, he might be a leader on that issue and say, you know what, I'm going to start manufacturing the products under the Trump line right here in the United States of America.
Is there anything else that you would like to see the secretary do to satisfy some of the concerns that you had with her when you decided to challenge her in the primary?
Well, let me just say this. I just spoke to the secretary last week, and what she told me is that within the first 100 days of her administration, she will be introducing legislation to deal very strongly with climate change, to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, to make public colleges and universities tuition-free for families earning $125,000 a year or less, and legislation to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure and create millions of decent-paying jobs. That is exactly what we need to do. And I will do everything I can to work with, President Clinton, to make those programs come into effect.
That's Bernie Sanders talking to our Brian Baxt in Minneapolis yesterday. This year's battle for majority control of the Minnesota House features five rematches in districts where Republicans beat DFL incumbents 2 years ago. The Democrats who used to represent those districts want to return to St. Paul, and they're counting on higher voter turnout in a presidential election year to help them turn the tables on November 8th. Tim Pugmire has the story.
St. Cloud Democrat Zach Dorhold is trying to win back the House seat he lost 2 years ago to Republican Jim Knobloch by a mere 69 votes. He blames the 2014 loss on low voter turnout, especially among college students. Dorhold served one term as part of the DFL majority. His loss helped flip control to the GOP. Dorhold says that's why he never stopped campaigning.
Well, I believe we did good things when I was there, and I've been told by others we accomplished more in 2 years than, you know, maybe had been accomplished the past 10, and we weren't finished.
Dorholt's attempt at a political comeback follows the one that Republican incumbent Jim Knobloch pulled off 2 years ago. Knobloch returned to the legislature after an 8-year retirement. As the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, Knobloch is making the case for re-election by highlighting his experience and his willingness to be independent.
I'm someone that's not afraid to stand up and do what I think is right for my community, and I think people know that.
Another House rematch is underway in Faribault, where DFLer Patty Fritz wants to win back the seat she lost 2 years ago to Republican Brian Daniels by 221 votes. Fritz is well known in the district after serving 10 years in the House. She says many people think she never left office.
And I get phone calls. Patty, can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? Of course, I'm not going to say no. And then, you know, I humble myself a little bit and say, you know, I'm not your representative. But I, you know, I'll see what I can do.
Incumbent Brian Daniels says he was a no-name until he knocked on thousands of doors in the district. Daniels says voters now know him and he has a record to run on. He said he's campaigning hard again this year to help keep Republicans in charge of the House.
I think it's extremely important to keep a balance at the Capitol. Above everything else, if you have one side control of everything, the House, Senate, and the governorship, either way, I think that's unhealthy for Minnesota. I think you really want to have a balance.
All five races are attracting significant spending from independent political organizations. The other key rematches involving former lawmakers are in West Central Minnesota. DFLer Mary Swatsky is challenging Republican Representative Dave Baker of Willmar, who she lost to by 214 votes. Andrew Falk is challenging Representative Tim Miller of Prinsburg, and Jay McNamer is challenging Representative Jeff Backer of Browns Valley. DFL House Minority Leader Paul Thiessen says he's optimistic about his challengers' chances in those contests.
I think they served their districts well as representatives, and you know, people know who they are, and I think that's always helpful when you are in a political race.
But Republicans want to keep a tight hold on the seats they picked up 2 years ago. House Speaker Kurt Dowd says he thinks the incumbents are in good shape. Dowd also questions the DFL strategy of running again with the same candidates.
We feel like these are good rematches because the decision's already been made. Voters in those districts already rejected these members, and for good reason in many cases.
Republicans have their own recycled candidates. 15 are challenging DFL incumbents that they lost to in 2014. Many of those rematches are in reliably DFL districts in Minneapolis and St. Paul. But Dowd said he thinks rematches in three suburban districts, Brooklyn Park, Edina, and Shoreview, are potential pickups for Republicans. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.